Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart, and this week we've been talking in depth about the 614-page The Dead Are Arising, The Life of Malcolm X, for our new series called Full Bio. The book was just released this week, and in its review, the New York Times says that the book, quote, is not a tribute or an enshrinement of achievements. Instead, it reconstructs the conditions and key moments of Malcolm's life, thanks to hundreds of original interviews with his family, friends, colleagues, and adversaries. Nobody has written a more poetic account. So today we look at the final years of Malcolm X's life, his decision to leave the Nation of Islam, how his views on race changed as he traveled to the Middle East and Africa, and why he wanted to make America's national civil rights issue an international human rights issue. Plus, we hear about why the temple he built from the ground up in Hartford, Connecticut, is a good example of Malcolm's strengths as an organizer. We also find out more about the events leading up to his assassination in February of 1965. The late Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter Les Payne spoke to so many people about Malcolm X's murder, witnesses, members of his personal security team, members of the Nation of Islam who helped plan it, and two men who were convicted of the crime. We spoke with his daughter, Tamara Payne, who was the principal researcher for The Dead Are Arising, about what her father learned about the final months of Malcolm's life. But first, we start by looking at why Malcolm X left the Nation of Islam. Part four of the book ranges from 1963 to 1965, and the first chapter in this section is chapter 15, and it's called The Split. We talked about Malcolm's growing frustration with the leadership of the Nation of Islam. Was he outgrowing the organization, or was there something else going on?
I mean, a lot of things were happening. I mean, he was feeling more restricted because, you know, he wanted to stand up. You know, he wants to stand up to the Klan. He wants to stand up to the brutalities against, you know, against Black people, whether it's the police coming into a temple in Los Angeles or, you know, police shooting a Muslim in New York. I mean, he wants to stand up and have a direct response. And Elijah Muhammad is like, you cannot engage with them that way, you know? And Malcolm is just feeling, you know, he's feeling very restricted by that.
Malcolm found out that Elijah Muhammad had not really been living his faith in the way he put out to the world, that he'd fathered children out of wedlock. There were rumors about how he behaved in his life, that he was leading a cushy lifestyle. Of all the revelations that Malcolm learned about Elijah Muhammad, which ones really shook him?
I mean, the babies is bad for him. I mean, I can't say which was more important than the others because I think this is growing over time. It's not as simple as, you know, because, you know, the messenger who preaches, you know, you should not fornicate, right? And has thrown people out of the temples for doing that. But yet here he is doing it. It's upsetting to him, but I think the other things that are more upsetting is when you look at the fact when things are happening to members of the nation by outsiders, they're not standing up, yet that's what they preach. And that was also problematic. And I think for me, it's not, when I look at it, it's not as simple as it's just the babies. It's all of these things together, really just building up this pressure where you're just like, wow, what's going on here? You're like, what, and how do I fit into this?
Malcolm speaks to Wallace, Elijah Muhammad's son, who had been trained in mainstream Sunni Islam, and he explains to him about Allah. Why was it, I don't know what the right word is exactly, Is destabilizing the right word? For Malcolm to learn that Wallace didn't agree with the foundational teachings and the origin story of the Nation of Islam? Disturbing? What's the right word?
It was disturbing for him. Mm-hmm. I mean, because he was believing it more than people, you know, maybe other people like to believe. Like Wilfred, for example, would say that Malcolm believed it more than other members of their family believed in it. People had joined the organization, as you know, Wilfred had described his joining the organization was not because he believed in who Allah was and who Farid Muhammad was. He joined it because there was some good things that they were doing and they could grow with it. And so, but he said that Malcolm definitely believed in that. But keep in mind, Elijah Muhammad was very much a father figure for Malcolm. He had a need for that, and having a need for that, that teacher, that relationship, because he too was also very close to his father. It's what you're saying about this person he's seeing as his father, and he's hearing this from the son, who's also the chosen one. It was shocking to him, I think, definitely.
I'm speaking with Tamara Payne. The name of the book is The Dead Are Arising, The Life of Malcolm X by Les Payne, father, and Tamara Payne. So once he leaves the Nation of Islam, Malcolm X established the Muslim Mosque, Inc., as well as the Organization of Afro-American Unity. Most people know this part of the story, that he made the Hajj to Mecca. How did it change his relationship to his faith and his views on race?
Well, at this point, you know, when he's splitting and growing, he's growing away from Elijah Muhammad, obviously, and as he's becoming more educated and focusing on Sunni Islam, he sees what the nation's teachings were, religious-wise, what they were, and he's disappointed, you know, with the mythology of it, but. But he said, you know, there were things that they were trying to do that were definitely worthy. So he didn't want, in my view, to totally like destroy the Nation of Islam. I don't think that was ever his view. I mean, he still had love for Elijah Muhammad because he just saw that there were things that they were trying to do that was good. He still saw the good in them, but there were just other things that he couldn't reconcile. So when he's now searching for another place, he doesn't have an organization anymore behind him that he can represent. He's on his own. Now he wants to organize on his own. And to me, this is also why, you know, the Harfa chapter is really important in part three, because you really see Malcolm, you know, develop and organize as an organizer a temple. You know, he has permission to do it from Elijah Muhammad, but Elijah Muhammad doesn't really have an interest whether it succeeds or not. Or he's just like, if you get them, great. You know, the more the merrier. And Malcolm, you know, Malcolm's not faced with the same kind of jealousies that he had to face when he was in the Midwest. And you kind of get to see how he would organize on his own. And, what I like about that too is that Hartford is a through line even for my family, and that my father grew up there. And so that's part of the reason why he spent so much time on Hartford. He grew up there, so he knew it. He knew it intimately, and he knew some of the people. And some of these people that were part of that temple that Malcolm organized, you know, worked with family members. You know, my uncle. And so there was a connection. But to also see, so to relate to these people, there's a real humanity going on here of who all of these people are. And you see a side of Malcolm that you just don't really see. You know, you see what he was trying to do and what his motivations, and how he's organizing the group. He wasn't doing it out of selfishness. He was doing it because he really wanted to help this group and stand on their own. And so I went back to that really to just kind of talk about Malcolm as an organizer. So when we see him at the end, after he splits from the Nation of Islam, you know, he still wants to organize. And also what's interesting is we come across this this point where he's actually meeting with some of the civil rights groups, right? Members of the civil rights groups. And there was a meeting in which they're discussing where they're going and what's going on with the struggle. And Malcolm throws out this idea of internationalizing the struggle and stop, you know, okay, we're calling the civil rights, but let's make it a human rights issue. And he's internationalizing that. And so when he's on this hodge, he's also carrying forth our cause of civil rights in America as an international issue to the UN. But in doing that, he's also connecting with African culture, African countries, leaders of states in African countries to support this. And so he still cares about the group here, and he's just still organizing and trying to find ways, and it's still like another option to what Martin Luther King is doing, you know, or building on that. And it's important to kind of see that. Now, the issue on what he saw as what white people were doing his experience with white people in this trip. What's interesting about this is that in America, he knows what America is about. He knows what white people are about in America. He grew up here, the laws, the attitudes throughout his life, right? What people are saying, how they write about us, how they continue to misconstrue how Black people in America are, and the segregation all over the country, not just in the South, but in the Northeast, in the Midwest, everywhere. And he understands that well. When he's going abroad, he's coming in contact with people who now they are Islam. Some of them are not. Some of them are also just struggling in their own countries, and they're not Black. They're white, and they understand what our struggle is over here. So what kind of opens him up to is like, people can identify with us, but they're not Black. He wanted to explore and see what that was about. And what he was doing at that time was listening to what that perspective is. What he says is, I am open and let these people show me who they are. I have not made a decision about them. I am open to listening to them.
In the book, we get a very detailed account of Malcolm X's assassination. We know that a week before, his home in Queens was set ablaze in the 3 o'clock in the morning. But there's some very interesting details, and I want people to read this whole section, so I'm just going to touch on a few. That we in the book, we learned about a man named Gene Roberts, who was one of the bodyguards that day, but who was also an undercover New York City police officer. And he's convinced that he witnessed a dry run of the assassination the day after Malcolm's house burned down. Why did he think that?
It's really interesting, too, because what he says in that, what he says in the interviews is that he believes he saw a dry run because the way that there was a disturbance. There's somebody that comes down the aisle and he's on security detail and he greets them. Well, he doesn't greet them, he goes to them too because they're coming down the aisle while Malcolm is speaking. And then there's something else that's going on, even though he says to us in the interviews, he didn't notice that commotion, but there is a tape of that lecture. And you kind of hear this commotion in the audience, and Malcolm kind of briefly pauses and he asks, you know, is everything okay? Okay, cool down, cool down. So that raises his suspicions, and he writes a report about that and reports to his superiors about, you know, that he really believes that there was a dry run and that this thing's going down. But part of the reason why we also already know that he's infiltrating the group is because they want to know what are the movements, but they also want, you know, they have an interest in seeing this happen. So as he says later on, is that in his reports is that that happened. And then he says that there was a fallback on the police coverage, and that kind of that surprised him. So yeah, he definitely felt that.
Who else was your father able to talk to for this important portion of the story?
This whole chapter, I mean, that was really interesting. He was able to talk to a lot of people. He spoke with both the men, Butler and Johnson, who went to jail for the murder. He spoke to them. He interviewed them. He also interviewed people who were in the Newark Mosque, who were part of the organizing and planning of the assassination. And so he spoke with people who were on the scene, such as Yuri Kuchiyama, who was a Japanese American woman who was living in Harlem, and she was a member of the Organization for Afro-American Unity at the time, and she was there at the assassination with her son. And there are pictures, photographs of her after Malcolm is shot. She runs to him, and there are pictures of him with her cradling his head on her lap. We've spoken with people from who are organizing the Afro-American Unity, the Organization for African-American Unity, such as Sarah Mitchell and James Shabazz, who is his second in command, his assistant, basically, who, you know, he had to check in all the time. So we've spoken with a lot of people. It's actually quite a lot. I mean, Benjamin Kareem, who was also there, who introduces Malcolm on the day, you know, of the D-Day, actually the assassination day. So we spoke to quite a few.
So, Tamara, this book is huge. I got through it. My producer got through it. Not I got through it. It was so much information. There was so much to learn. 612 mm-hmm. pages and then 614 all to weigh together. This is almost unfair to ask, but I'm going to do it anyway. Is there something in this book and in compiling this book that you thought was important because it needed to correct the public record?
What we really, the intention of the book is really to give a fuller picture of Malcolm. My father was a journalist, and he was a journalist to his core. And his approach to this was really to do this as a journalist. And he wanted to interview and talk to and get as many of those stories that he could get. And as a journalist, what you find is that you're getting kind of firsthand, you're not only getting firsthand accounts, but not necessarily accounts that you're going to find in history books. So what we wanted to do was report out as accurately as we could the story that we could find. So yeah, I mean, there may be things that people will say aren't in here, but what we have in here, we stand on.